Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
And today we have a ton of news and things to talk about. So buckle up, because here we go.
Buckle up. Buckle it up in your brand new Tesla that you picked up this week. Buckle it up as it drives you into the future, right off into the sunset on its own. Hopefully not underneath the truck. God bless that person who died. This is a terrible way to open a show. We want you to give us feedback.
Maybe not so terrible. We'll see.
It's the truth. It's the dark side of the future. Future's not so bright. Actually, we'll get to that. I'm hinting at something. We want you to give us feedback about today's show. And so, as always, we want you to leave that feedback for us in the discuss comment box below. And you can do that officially right now on futurecommerce.fm. We are there and we are live, and we're working on a new site design and all kinds of stuff. So we're really excited about it. Want you to go there, and we want you to click on, there's a couple buttons right at the top. You can click to subscribe to Future Commerce on iTunes or Google Play, or even if you want, you can listen to Future Commerce on your Amazon Echo on TuneIn Radio with the phrase Alexa Play Future Commerce
Podcast.
Podcast. Yeah, you have to put the podcast. But we can make an announcement.
Yeah, speaking of working on things.
Yeah, so Philip, we are working.
What are you working on right now?
So I'm building an Alexa skill with the brand new audio streaming feature that's part of the Alexa skill kit that was just announced on the 24th. So just not even 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So it's brand new, but you can build all kinds of really interesting streaming audio applications now, which were previously only available to certain developers. And so we're going to build a Future Commerce skill. And so you'll be able to say, you know, you'll be able to ask for the latest episode and do all the things that you think you could possibly do, or even ask for an episode by the episode number, and it'll fetch it. And it's kind of working right now. But
It's working, right?
Yeah, it's working. it's working. I really want to put a lot more features into it, like of being able to like get the episode number by its number, or maybe even by like a key phrase and sort of search for it. But maybe those are things that come in time, but I think it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And what I would love to do is love to get some people to use it and give us feedback. And if you do wind up using it, you can install it. It should be in the Alexa skill store, today when you're listening to this episode. So just go there and search for Future Commerce and you'll find it.
Yeah. Next episode, maybe we should like even do a little demo.
We should demo it. When I don't have her turned all the way down,
Yeah, we get all meta and even like start an episode while we're doing an episode. And,
yeah. Oh, you know. Wow. That'd be so crazy. That reminds me. Do you remember there was a show on HBO about 20 years ago? I'm dating myself. Called Mr. Show with Bob and David.
And, man, that's that is dating yourself, because I do not remember that. I'm that much younger than you.
It has two very, very famous people, Bob Odenkirk, who you would know as from Breaking Bad.
Wait. Isn't that David Cross as well?
David Cross and Bob Odenkirk, yeah.
Yes, I know about that. I haven't really done anything with it, but I do know.
Oh, they're
about
hilarious, but they have this phenomenal sketch that's totally meta. That is, it's a public access television show that records every week, but they record on a 1 week tape delay. So they're taking calls from last week's episode and this week's episode. And then at the end of him like getting frustrated because someone's calling in about pets, but it's really, this episode is about old people. Then he's like, look at this right now. It's not that hard. I've told you a million times, we're on a 1 week tape delay. And he pulls the television over and he shows that it's the old one, but because it's on a 1 week typically, now we're seeing an episode about something else. And then in that episode, meta, he does the same thing at the end of that episode and the same thing at the end of it becomes like this, like, very Inception, you know, show within a show sort of thing. Anyway.
Oh, dude, I had a buddy, not to go too far down this rabbit trail, but I had this buddy who worked with me a while back, and he did this photo mug of him holding a photo mug, and it got pretty deep. It got a little bit uncomfortable, like uncomfortably deep.
Unprintably deep, I think. I love things like that. I don't know why. But speaking of meta, actually, one of our best episodes that we've ever had was the episode previous to this. So if you're new to the show, I really want you to pause this episode and go back and listen to episode 9.
Episode 10, man.
Yeah, this is episode 10. So you need to go back and listen to episode 9 with Scott Emmons.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Scott Emmons. I'm on a 1 week tape delay, so I'm like, that's what made me think about this. So you need to go back and listen to our interview with Scott Emmons from the Neiman Marcus Innovation Lab. Great, great episode, and really great that he came on the show. And so we really want you to listen to that. And you know what? There's an episode that's not getting a lot of love, and it's my favorite episode that we've ever done, is episode 5.
Shoot, that's a great episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went back and listened to that episode in full, which I'm not going to lie, I don't do that with every episode. And it was so good.
It's so good. And Tom Robert Shaw of Mean Bee, who does a lot of work with cognitive commerce and Watson. I just feel like cognitive is something that we are going to be talking about a lot. So it's very,
absolutely,
yeah, very, very cool stuff kind of coming out of that. And in fact, it's not on our show notes right now. Have we discussed the Watson experiment to cut together that movie trailer? Did we discuss
that at all? No, we didn't put that in. That was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you actually go to, right now, where is it? I think if you check it out, I saw it on Adweek. It's the first cognitive movie trailer, what they're calling the first cognitive movie trailer for a horror movie called Morgan, which is coming out, in October, as you know, most horror movies do in North America.
I think it's out.
Is it really? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I think it's out.
I felt like it was coming. But it's a show about artificial intelligence kind of becoming sentient, and you know, the whole dystopian view of AI. So they thought it would be like really trippy to have Watson create the trailer. Well, they didn't use it. It's not the theatrical trailer. It's more of a YouTube experiment. But did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched the trailer. It was actually pretty good. It was, I mean, I was impressed, no doubt.
Yeah. So was there anything weird that you noticed about it?
I didn't like watch it in detail, but yeah. What did you notice?
I mean, the same thing that was it Sunspot? What was the name of the movie that was,
Sunspring.
Sunspring. It's the same thing that I had a problem with in Sunspring, is that it's just complete, like, these very strange choices of context. Like, it totally nails the thematic and musical choices and, like, weird stuff. But there were weird cuts, like long periods of silence and people staring at each other, which is actually really cool because it was kind of unsettling. Because it's, you know, I don't know. It was not
intentional.
In the history of trailers, not a great trailer, but it's interesting. Anyway, very cool stuff happening in cognitive. And if you want to hear more about that, go back to episode 5, check out our interview with Tom Robert Shaw. Anyway, we've got a bunch of news this week. Kick us off, Brian. Get us into the show here.
Well, we already talked about one thing, the Alexa streaming skill. Speaking of Amazon, though, it is commerce related. I think it's worth talking about briefly, but Amazon's piloting a 30-hour work week, which is very interesting given Amazon's reputation. I think most listeners would probably have heard this, but Amazon's reputation is actually that it's a relatively intense place to work. There was that, I think, was it New York Times article? Was it the Times or
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There was a fairly like hefty article about how rough it was to work there, actually.
Yeah, it was sort of like an op-ed in one of the major publications about how it was very frequent. It was not infrequent to see people like head down on their desk crying and all kinds of like other
people just get burned out all the time.
Yeah, horrific
and I want to leave, you know, like as soon as they vest. So, I don't know how much of that's completely accurate. I kind of doubt that it's like, yeah, but I'm sure there are situations in our different divisions. It's a huge company, right? I mean, it's actually, so I'm in Seattle, as you might have known from my Twitter handle. I moved away to Missouri for 3.5 years. This is, 5 years ago now. I came back, and Amazon had completely changed the sort of South Lake Union area. Pretty crazy. Like, they are constantly growing, they're constantly building, and it's just a huge company. So anyway, sure. Great that they're piloting this, though. I think there's a lot of interesting evidence to show that for certain people, this is actually a really effective way to do business and a worthwhile way to do business.
But I think the what's really important here is that it's a 30-hour work week, but it's 75% of the full-time pay.
Right.
So you'll still be salaried. You're still going to get the same benefits, but you know, you're working 3/4 of a week. You're going to get 3/4 of the pay, which I think is, I mean, sure, that's totally fair. Right. But you contrast that with the approach of some other companies that have done that very recently. A good example would be there was a story in Fast Company. I saw it 2 weeks ago. I'm not sure if it's a new story or not, but it's a company called Tower Paddleboards. I read it last week. It was published last week. So Stefan,
8:30. Yeah.
Yeah. Stefan Arstall, he wrote about how he transitioned his company to a modified work schedule. So everyone works 8 to 1. And so they're going for that. It's 5 days a week, but it's from 8 to 1, and they piloted it just for 3 months, like a year ago. And now they decided to stick with it. And so beyond that, they're also doing some profit sharing. So they had some really interesting, benefits to working there, but the idea was, you know, they wanted to make sure that they were still competitive. And so they were asking people to be like 100% like more productive than they usually are. And then, you know, if they can do that, then they would stick with it. And I think that's the important thing. There's a lot of things, a lot of smart economists that would tell you, that the economy depends on, productivity, and it depends on the American worker in the United States, at least, being able to be more productive and to output more goods and services for less time input. And so if we're all working less, I'm not sure what the net effect is. There seems to be a lot of studies that say that the net effect is positive.
There are at least some pilots. I mean, I think the key here is, like, I think, and if you go into the depth of the article, that, you know, he says basically we ask people to be extremely efficient with their time.
Yeah.
And occasionally, you know, if they need to stay a little bit longer, they do, you know, but it's more of an exception than the rule. And so I think it's more about setting the culture of being very intentional, efficient, intense at while you're working at work, and then, you know, reap the rewards down, you know, by being able to get off early and not just kind of waste your time.
I mean, and they're not alone, right? There's a lot of people that are a lot of companies and even governments that are experimenting with 6-hour workdays and some other, you know, some other things. So it's really interesting.
I mean, and it kind of makes sense to me. And I mean, I don't really know, you know, if it's valid or not, but it kind of makes sense, like, given the pace that I know a lot of people, you know, I know a lot of people who work really hard, and you can't help but think, yeah, like, if you work at that pace, at some point during the day, you're just going to kind of lose productivity. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah,
I could see coming back in the evening and putting in a couple hours or something like that, or, you know.
I don't know. This is it's not future workforce as a podcast, but I think it's a really interesting topic. Something I think we will be exploring more, because I think this is important. I know more people. We talked about the sharing economy a few episodes ago, and I know more people now than ever who not only carry more than one job, but they are extremely open about it. And that used to be very taboo in our culture, right?
That's a really good point. I think maybe, you know, the commerce side of this is, we might see, and I think we already are seeing this, more side businesses, more people kind of doing, you know, having their side hustle, and maybe the economy and commerce will advance as a result.
Well, I think we are seeing that. Uber and Airbnb, that is their entire business model, is capitalizing on people's unused time, unused cars, unused homes, or, you know, sometimes used homes. But people are trying to find a way, you know, to bring in either extra income or make better use of their free time. And I think that, you know, it was the promise that I think Amazon's Mechanical Turk never delivered on, which was like the opt-in workforce.
Yes,
you know what absolutely. I mean, like the sign on when you want workforce and do whatever, you know, do small little tasks and get paid for them. That is Uber. But instead of, you know, training machine learning or doing manual tasks and identifying photos, which, by the way, Mechanical Turk is an incredible piece of technology, and I'd love to have somebody on the show to talk about that sort of, you know, workforce automation, workforce innovation. But
totally agree, man. Because
it powers so much of the internet, and people don't even really know that. Yep. Everything from, you know, it's things like, you know, doing filters for minors or pictures of nudity or any, you know, there's all kinds of things that only humans can do. And so it's really well suited for that. But it was the promise, I think, that 10 years ago that really never came to be, which was, this is something that's going to change the way that people work, is that they can opt in, make a good amount of money, and kind of sign on and off whenever they want. And Uber kind of became that. So, anyway, keeping on, we'll move away from that now, but I think it's interesting. Love to hear your feedback on what you think about that. Are you working a modified schedule right now? Does your company offer flex time? Are you able to sort of opt to work from home? I'd love to hear how your job has changed over the last few years. So if you're a listener, please hit us up. We'd love to hear that. Last but not least for the Amazon news, the new Dot was leaked. The Echo Dot, which was discontinued a few months ago, was leaked, quote unquote leaked. Does Amazon make mistakes?
I think they do. I think actually when it comes to releasing things, they actually have a little bit of trouble. Sometimes they have trouble with different like movies and like, I don't know, like publishing movies.
Oh, I see.
Things like that.
Teams that like aren't able to like work in tandem or something to that effect. At any rate, it came out, this thing hit Twitter. It was deleted within like seconds, but you know, it's on the internet.
So that's all the internet needs. Blessed, and now we all know.
Yeah, exactly.
And honestly, if they release it for a penny over $49.99, I think that people will be pretty unhappy because. Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's actually where the Dot should be priced. At that price, I feel a lot happier about purchasing a Dot than I did at the, what was it, like $79 that they had it before.
Yeah. I mean, very competitive with the Google Home devices if and when those land, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Dot's an add-on, right? So it's not meant to be a standalone device.
I mean, people say that because it doesn't do the speaker stuff, but I find myself more and more, I have now, I think, eight or nine Wemo devices in my house, light switches.
Nice.
And this, I find myself more and more using my Echo for home automation, and so having a Dot in the bedroom so that I can kind of use my if then that, you know, go to bed settings, like, it's huge. And I know it's dumb to have $99 invested in a little device that's all really it does. But at the end of the day,
It's yeah, the this, future.
Yeah, this really shouldn't. Yeah, this really shouldn't even be. Honestly, shouldn't even be a physical device. Like, this should just be on somebody's phone. But especially because the dot.
We talked about this. Yeah, they can't do that yet. Like, they don't have the they don't have the method to do that yet.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, okay, whatever.
You're right.
I, yeah. Okay. So anyway, I it's interesting. Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. End of story. Full stop.
So another thing, Apple had their product event.
Speaking of virtual assistants on the go.
Yeah, actually, so this was pretty exciting to me. I know that I think people had a lot to say about this recent Apple event.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, really, it just comes down to courage. So, you know. I shouldn't have even made that joke
because
everyone's already made that joke.
Every joke,
so much.
Yeah, I kind every of feel joke bad that can be made
at this point
has like, been made. Yeah. I actually do think it's I'll be the apologist. I love Apple products. I do think they're on a downward slope right now. I don't think there's some weird stuff happening at Apple, but I kind of like the AirPods.
Yeah. I mean, I did hear some people compare them to like ancient Bluetooth devices.
I didn't hear that comparison. I thought they looked more like they're straight out of Doctor Who. It was like an episode of Doctor Who that, you know, that's.
I can definitely see that. I'm actually personally really excited about them. I think that this is a technology that has been needing a little bit of a facelift and an update. And the thing that got me most excited, and I feel like it's really hinting where Apple wants to go, and I really hope that they do go, is the double tap to Siri.
Yeah.
On the earbud, which I think that is very telling of their next steps, that they want to incorporate Siri more into our lives. They might even want to have Siri, you know, interacting with us, you know, as we're walking around, and have Siri push notifications to us and do things like that. So
yeah, the thing that Google Glass was supposed to have done for us.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like this. I think it's interesting to be able to have Siri there. They're putting Siri everywhere now. But I'm sort of thinking, I don't know. I don't interact with Siri a whole lot because I only have Siri on my iPad, so I can't really say one way or another. I know who does interact with Siri a lot is this is a terrible what a terrible segue. Is the inventor of Siri.
Well, you'd think he would, but no. The good, transition there. This is a great article. So this just came out on September 10th.
Yeah.
And
Babak Hajat, who is the basically the founder of Sentient Technologies, which you know, sort of, he's the what they would call the inventor of Siri. He was interviewed in Business Insider. I didn't read the whole article, so maybe you can kind of give us a little bit of a synopsis.
No, he was just kind of throwing a little shade in Alexa's direction and said that, you know, it's not saying that it's not quite ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he basically said it's a little side niche and it's just something to play around with. It's not really.
But the main reason is such a stupid reason. I don't know. It's a silly reason. He says it's because it doesn't have a screen. It doesn't have a screen. So it's only controlled by your voice. So, you know, how can that be an engaging experience, you know?
Which is actually not completely true. You can actually connect. There is a little bit of an interaction with Alexa on your screen via the app and
other of course. Ways, so yeah, but yeah. It doesn't give you. You know, I think his point. Exactly. But his point is that you can consume so much more at a glance than you can, you know, from just voice alone or from speech. The thing is, I think people who are friends in the accessibility world and those with disabilities who are. You know, might be listening to this podcast, they suffer through this all the time, right? This is not an uncharted territory trying to digest massive amounts of information purely over speech. Try looking up movie times with Alexa, and you'll find out exactly how hard that is. So,
interesting. I didn't realize that this guy also, he founded sentient.ai.
Yeah.
They've got some really cool tools. We should talk about them more in length in another episode.
Yeah.
But they've got some really cool e-commerce tools that I've looked at before, including some like AI stuff for A/B testing that looks awesome.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, at any rate, I think this is, it's evident, you know, Amazon and Apple are competing a lot more in this space. If from a commerce perspective, which is the whole center theme of our podcast, who of the two is better positioned to capture commerce opportunities? You would think it's Amazon, but, you know, Apple's payment platform is coming about pretty quickly, and I think you control payments, you control the world.
That's true, but Amazon does have a payments tool as well. But yes, let's talk about Apple's payments tools, because yeah, sure. It just launched for the web, which is a really big deal. It's going to be pretty seamless. They announced it actually back in spring.
Yeah, forever ago. Yeah.
Right. And now it's finally available. But the
Apple Pay Web is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so cool. Like when you actually hit pay for it, well, it's kind of annoying because you can only use it in Safari right now. But you hit pay and then it shoots an auth to your phone, and yeah, you can do the auth with your fingerprint.
Yeah. You use Touch ID. Super sharp. Touch ID, and you can, you know, authorize the payment right there. Bang.
I think, which, did we talk about this when that actually came out?
It was WWDC. It was, I think, our first episode. It was announced at WWDC after it had already been soft demoed or piloted with Shopify, which is an e-commerce platform. But I think that this is awesome because this hints at the thing that we love to think about is how our right now the digital commerce and traditional commerce channels are still separated. They're becoming closer, and this puts them, this puts the two one in the same for me, because real life authentication really closes a security loophole or a security gap. And so I really feel like this is much bigger than I think anybody really gets. Because it's going to enable a whole new level of payments and probably instill a little bit of new life back in Apple's mobile strategy, both with mobile Safari and Safari on desktop. So it's an interesting play. I love the idea.
Yeah, I love the idea too. I think initially, I think it might take a little bit for adoption, like because merchants are going to have to go and actually add it to their sites and actually start, which will require some integration and, you know, just thinking through different scenarios. So I think it'll be a bit before we really start to see this become more pervasive. But once it does, it's going to be...
anybody can do this, it's Apple. Look what they did in the space of a year with mobile payments, with Apple Pay, and that's harder by a long way because of the diversity of the point of sale market and enterprise. By hardware is not an easy thing to solve for. And if anyone can do it, it's Apple, and they did it.
This has already been pioneered.
Like, this is it. This has been done. Right. This is not a new thing. And they're just using the same. You know, just to get a little bit into the tech a bit, they're using the exact same process that Apple Pay has been using at point of sale. It's a digital pan. It's the D-pan. This is not a new technology either, by the way. But single use credit card numbers that are used and sort of disposable. I think it should integrate very cleanly with most any e-commerce or traditional e-commerce application. I really want to see this. I really hope that it's really just not focused only for visual web experiences, but if it were open on the payment side to be able to push those off payments from conversational on like Facebook Messenger or from Slack or something like that.
That would be sick.
That's the next level, because that's that for me marries all of these current tech trends that are pushing us toward future future commerce behaviors.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff. Anyway. Speaking of conversational, we were both taking looking at an article recently here that I found really like a pretty solid article out of VentureBeat by a guy named Matt Swanson.
Yep.
And I just want to call out a couple things here, because you know we talk about conversational obviously quite a bit on this show. I'll post the link in the notes for this episode. But there's just some really interesting things I think to call out. Granted, some of this was from, you know, he kind of pulled together from different resources. Like he quotes Mary Meeker, her 2016 Internet Trend Report, which we've referenced that a couple times. Some other stuff. So the article is called The $200 Billion Chatbot Disruption, and particularly like part two. It just talks about how, you know, Generation Y is just so so far further in using voice. Actually, it's not voice, but from chatting, social media to actually do business contact, which is so true. I mean, I'm not even in Generation Y, but I see this happening more and more. And as a part of, you know, I guess actually, according to this, I am part of Generation Y, which is kind of funny.
which is the millennial generation, the word you hate.
I hate that word. Yeah. I really do.
That's okay. That's okay.
Actually,
can we dissect that a little bit? I think you only hate it because it's always associated with some sort of disdain. Right, because
no,
it is descriptive of a generation of people that were born around the turn of the millennium. It's not
that's
like
that's fair. No, the reason why I hate the term is certainly there is a certain amount of disdain whenever it's used, no doubt. But more importantly, I feel like it's really just bad, like marketing. Really, it's and what I mean by that is I think this is a little bit of my pet theory right now, but. What people used to use to separate generations, like the age ranges and people's common experience and how they think about things, that gap is closing, such that these generations are actually more like 5 years. as the pace of technology has increased. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So like my experience from say a 23-year-old, or I guess now like 5 years back, a 26-year-old, is actually a fairly drastically different experience growing up than I had. Like they grew up getting a cell phone at age, you know, 12 or whatever. they've always had broadband. You know, they hardly know what a dial-up modem sounds like. Like it's almost night and day. Like what I played with and what I had as a child versus someone 5 years from me. And I think it really does change the way that I think about the world and how they think about the world. So
all those are fair. Yeah, that's all fair. That's I think you're right on all of those things.
So. Forget the term millennial.
Well, okay, fine. So, but the term, I think what I'm trying to drive at is that this article by in VentureBeat talks about how the in particular, and you kind of hit on it already, not just about the popularity of business contact channels, which now that we're talking about this, I feel like we've talked about this before.
We have.
Yeah, the potential salary savings created by chatbots, which makes me want to talk about the future of the workforce again, because forget salary savings, put that aside for a minute, but there was a pretty interesting concept progressive. This actually is in the VentureBeat article. We should, you know what, just go read the VentureBeat article. but they talked about, you know, some of the you know, the acquisition I don't know. It was a different insurance company that Progressive took on that was almost fully self-service and automated online. I forget the name of it.
Geico?
No. It's it's going to drive me nuts. Everybody out there has it on the tip of their tongues, and they're just waiting for us right now to get it. It doesn't matter.
I should probably go back and look at it.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, they had this. It's the future. Instead of employing, you know, hundreds of adjusters and thousands of customer service personnel and salespeople to sort of sell these policies, most of these things became self-service online. And I think what we're seeing now is it's not when you look at some of the data that's come out, and we'll have to link up some articles to prove it. But when you look at some of the data that's come out, the jobs that are being lost in the United States of America are not just in manufacturing areas, but they're happening all over the country, usually associated in areas of industry where insurance is big. So Connecticut, seeing people, Mutual of Omaha, Nebraska. So like Nebraska seeing a huge migration of people that are leaving and moving to other places where there's more opportunity. I think what we're seeing is it's really not that people overseas are taking our jobs and that jobs are being shipped overseas to be done at a lower price. That certainly is happening. But I think it's that there's such an automation, a level of automation that's happening from a technological revolution point of view, that's replacing the need to have such a large workforce. It's not a new concept. I'm not breaking any ground saying that, but I think when you look at the data, it's really interesting to say that, hey, we're going to keep seeing, you know, chatbots might just replace everything, you know.
APIs.
I mean, that's a great article. That's a great segue, by the way. That's a great article. So
another article that I should post. There's an article on Chatbox Magazine, which is something that we definitely wanted to refer.
Yeah, big shout out to them, because it's, if you're interested in conversational at all or chatbots in general, great place to go get some news there.
There was an article posted by Josh Barkin. That's the wrong article. Shoot, no, I don't have it up. I started digging around. But Zach Matthew posted an article about conversational bots and the future of APIs. And this article gets into an idea that basically APIs could evolve into bots because they actually, you know, it's a conversational sort of, you know, communication back and forth between two entities, which it really implies that a bot could take it over. So
yeah. Well, I think what's really interesting about that is we use APIs to build these bots right now. In fact, on chatbotsmagazine.com, they have a step-by-step tutorial on how to build a Pokemon chatbot, which is kind of fun. Listen, all of these things are... An API only exists for us to be able to communicate in some standard way with a computer, and or to negotiate some sort of a request from a computer. And so as chatbots or machine learning or any of these any of this AI starts to mature and it understands natural language, then I think anything that has very rigid language or linguistic interfaces, APIs included, are ripe for revolution, because, you know, these things will be adding some flexibility. One thing I am building, because I'm building this, you know, Alexa skill right now for our podcast, which is so simplistic. But when you think about the way that people are going to use the skill, it's exercising a different part of my brain. I'm a developer. By trade. I've been a developer for 15 years. And I'm not an interface designer, you know? So, yeah. So when I start thinking about what are the ways that people could ask to want to play an episode, or what are some of the ways that I would want to, as a customer or a listener, be able to interact with, you know, with the skill, you really have to anticipate and be very, very explicit. You look at some of these skill templates that Amazon provides, and you have to be extremely explicit with a little bit of flexibility on how requests are formatted and how they're being asked. So they're not, they're still very rigid, is the point I'm trying to make. And you have to anticipate a lot. So yeah, some revolution there would be so helpful.
Yeah. Man, that a few things that we've said today on the show, like how, you know, bots could replace workforce. We talk about a shorter work week.
Yeah.
I think this kind of, should I go here now?
Yeah,
should
just go now? For it. Yeah.
No. We've got other stuff to hit on first.
No.
Let's come
the
back
to this.
The other
stuff can wait. The stuff can wait. No. This is the show. We made this show the way this, we're now talking about this stuff. Say it.
Oh, I know, but I wanted to get to the feedback we've heard on the show before I jumped into this. But I mean, think about this. Are we like, is the shortened days on workforce maybe related? That's probably not related to it. I know it's not related to tech sort of taking over parts of what we do, but it, I think, you know, with the stats that we were looking at in the VentureBeat article, maybe there's actually potentially, and I'm not saying I actually believe this, but let me just toss this out there. A darker side to this where, you know, as we build out more efficient technologies and so on, there's going to be a bit of upheaval in terms of how we employ and what is a high paid job going to look like? What is a low paid job going to look like? We talk about the conversational economy. What does that actually mean? So, you know, I think one of the points he makes in the VentureBeat article is that actually these call centers will actually be manned by high-paid chatbot managers, right?
Yeah.
And so let's head down into the feedback of our show real quick, because I think this plays
this,
into
this
something
gets into
that
it and we can talk about it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Recently we've hit some pretty awesome feedback from our listeners. I think my favorite feedback so far was from Joe Constant, who tweeted, new drinking game, listen to at Commerce Future and drink every time you hear there's no reason why. So
there's no reason why you couldn't play this game at home.
Oh, exactly. I'd say, you know, there's no reason why you wouldn't get drunk playing this game.
Yeah, there's no reason why you shouldn't tweet Joe Constant and ask him to play this game with you on Skype. I love this because it actually it's shown me something. So he said that kind of on the heels of some other feedback that you'll get to here in a second. But it sort of when you take an objective look at how we've been looking at this first 10 episode stretch, that is very good feedback.
Yeah, so and to be fair, Joe, I mean, I think that. We get some great feedback from Gil, who said, really great job so far, loving this podcast. It's interesting to hear where commerce is headed. Yeah. But that kind of leads us to kind of some other feedback we got, which is really interesting, and I love this.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to – this is from one of our listeners. I'm just going to – do you want to read it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I got it.
All right, here we go.
It's pretty long, but I think this is so useful, this feedback. And so this is from our listener, Piotr Kaminsky. He said, he sent me a direct message, and it said, at Phil Winkle. So he hit me up on Twitter. He said, I haven't seen a good place to discuss future commerce, so I'm just going to vent to you here. Well, Piotr, you can actually leave it in the discuss feedback box below on the site.
Anyway, that is right.
First, I wanted to say I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of quality content and good discussion there. But my perception of the show is everything will be awesome. And I have two major problems with that. The first is I do understand that you guys take a very United States-centric view of the world and technology, but it doesn't show the major crisis that Europe is undergoing right now. The crisis results in nationalist and fascist groups winning or getting voted out ahead in many countries, and I believe that this is going to have a major impact on country levels like regulation and protectionist practices that will stifle European Union-wide e-commerce. And that's a great point, actually. He goes on to say this is the optimistic scenario. A pessimistic one could be possibly a war or major unrest that could lead to crisis, wipe out a lot of the types of things that you're talking about. And then he talks about some things like innovations happening based on things that are happening that are going to be entirely dependent on immigration or these are all novelties, essentially. They're non-essential products, things that aren't food and water and shelter, and they all increase the amount of money that we're spending. And so he goes on to basically say, in the event that there is a global crisis, we're not really worried about, you know, the things we're worried about are non-essential right now. The things we're talking about on this podcast are non-essential. So I think that that's really interesting. He does finish up with one really great point, which is Silicon Valley folks can only buy so many Alexas. So I consider a lot of these technologies and what you say, what you're talking about are going to stay limited to very specific demographics, not getting mainstream. If they don't get mainstream, then will be rather limited return on investment for many sellers that cater to the larger audiences. The Bonobos and the Warby Parkers of the world can use them to be successful for sure, but Walmart probably not so much. Up until episode 6, I haven't heard any discussion about changes in commerce that could affect everybody, and I haven't seen a lot of things. Basically, he doesn't think that we're going in that direction. So he would like to see something that revolutionizes commerce or e-commerce, not just for people in Silicon Valley, but also for, you know, truck drivers and everyone else. So he wants to see us tone down the optimism of this show slightly. But I think that's the best email ever.
It is. It's really fantastic. Because the thing is, I mean, if you look back at history, and I'm not going to get too political or too historical, but this world isn't without its upheavals. Sure. And so, yeah. And you see a lot of this come up in pop culture. I think, you know, it's almost like, you know, like, did you see Stranger Things?
Oh yeah. 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 That's a great show.
It is a great show. No doubt. It's like the, what do they call it? The underneath.
The upside down.
The upside down. That's right. Yeah.
It's the alternate universe, the parallel universe.
Yeah.
That the monster lives in. And that's, you know, this is the, he's describing the upside down is what he's.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a pretty optimistic person, but I'm not going to say that I don't see that there is danger ahead potentially.
Sure.
There's a lot of upheaval in the world. That said, I think that what is happening in Silicon Valley, and not just Silicon Valley, but lots of places throughout the U.S. And I think he does definitely make a really great point. A lot of what we have said on the show has been pretty U.S. centric. And so, you know, a lot of stuff happening in the U.S. and throughout the world that are making a really positive impact on our lives today. There definitely is sort of, a lot of concerns. And I think you've hit on those throughout our shows, like the body data episode, the first one to say, like, what about privacy? What about security? We've talked about this many times. Like, there may be something that we're giving up as we go forward with this. And I've talked to a lot of other millennials that we're kind of in the spot that I'm in, which is like, yeah, we're kind of concerned about privacy and security, but not nearly as much as the generation before us.
Right.
And so, what is that actually a problem? You know. And are there are much bigger implications, kind of like what I was driving at before we hit this feedback, which is, you know, people losing jobs in call centers and and things like that. Now, I would definitely contend, this is just, you know, my sort of belief that, you know, if we continue to innovate, jobs are going to present themselves, because there's going to be other more important things to do than sort of less skilled positions. So, well,
possibly,
yeah,
you know, to take his position, it's how much work is there really when, you know, when there's war in your own country? And so the question I think becomes for me, well, technology is not going to stop innovating. I mean, you look even through the greatest conflicts in the last, you know, century.
You could say that actually conflicts have brought about innovation.
That's what I was going to say. So World War II, out of that spawned the space race, nuclear technologies, you know, the Cold War.
About,
yeah. I mean, those conflicts create amazing opportunities for us to innovate. And while they're not the innovation that's, you know, buying crap, you know, from your living room with your voice, it might be asking Siri where the closest, you know, bread and soup line are. So, I mean, that's such a terrible thing to say, but that's
what I think that there are other people, I mean, there are a lot of other people that are out there, even in Silicon Valley, that I think are thinking about this. You look at, I think Y Combinator is doing a study on base income. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw. Yeah, like a standard living wage. Yeah,
exactly. It's basically like everyone gets paid for, you know, just as a base part of, you sure. know, of living. You know, I'm not saying that I think a lot of people flip that around and be like, well, isn't this just like basically welfare for everyone? But then there's several different variations of this. I do think there is something here though, which is, you know, As automation makes our lives more and more efficient, you know, are we going to see the whole 1% 99% split get even bigger and bigger?
Well, it seems to be hinting that that's the direction we're heading. But I would also say that, you know, a lot really depends on having some stability for, you know, the next few years, you know, economically. And we don't, you know, we've had a little bit of, we've had some stability here in the United States. I think, you know, we're trying to hold on to that. I think something really interesting is you see all the development and all of the, VC money right now is going, toward, fintech. And I really think, you know, there's probably five or six, investment apps I could list off the top of my head. There's Betterment. There's all kinds of ones out there. It's kind of interesting because so many people are putting investment into how to save for retirement or how to put, you know, how to squirrel away money. You know, by you know, kind of shaving, you know, those roundup transactions, you know, there's all of that kind of tech advancement is happening right now, and it's good advancement. And it's not necessarily the types of things that we're talking about on the show, but I do think that they are things that are bred, you know, in times of peace and times of, you know, relative abundance. But we're going to need it to stay this way for a little while for us to get to a place where, you know, we have so many people and not enough jobs that a living wage is a thing that we seriously have to look at. And you could probably look at some very, very small nations, you know, with much smaller workforces to be leading the charge on that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and like you said, you know, I think, which country? I think there was a country in the Netherlands that was actually, or in Scandinavia that was actually pioneering base income for the entire nation.
Yeah.
I
remember this. This was I remember Sweden was doing
Sweden?
Sweden had a I'm sorry. That's they were working on a 6-hour workday. I believe maybe Finland was talking about a living wage. But you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a long time, I think, before we're quite there, and a lot of things have to change for something like, you know, again, I think we are taking the everything is awesome approach. There's a lot of problems and drawbacks to a living wage. I think you're, you know, That doesn't come for free. There's something, like you said, we're giving up to get to that sort of a society, and it's hardly a utopia.
I think that's a really great point.
There's always going to be a lot of people who want to, you know, you need to be able to express your own individuality, and some people like to work really hard. Some people like to not work hard. And so you can't just clump everybody together and put them all at the same, you know, financial, you know, bracket. Plus, you know, some people have medical problems, and so they'd have to use part of their money to pay for that. There's all kinds of things that would make this a very difficult proposition. But at the end of the day, you know, if we look, look where we've come from. You mentioned Stranger Things. Look where we've come from in the 33 years since that show was set in 1983. Look where we are. You know, you look at that show, and there's a lot that's really, really, really changed from their world to ours. So
yeah, you know, no joke, man. I mean, her corded phone gets fried, right?
The corded phone, which sparked this incredible discussion. I don't know if you read it on Reddit, but there was a whole amazing discussion about the AT&T monopoly on phones at the time in 1983. Did you know this? Home phones.
No, I didn't catch this.
Yeah, home phones were only available, and there was a whole government. There was a whole law, a telecommunications law, that had to be passed to sort of break up their monopoly in this area. AT&T wouldn't really sell you a phone; they would only rent it to you for like $5 a month. And they were really the only place where you could get a phone. And so they were saying, oh, this is sort of an anachronistic thing, because she went in to go buy the phone at the drugstore. You could not have done that in 1983, which is something I never knew. But, you know, that was rotary dial. Yeah, I didn't catch that. There was so much that's just changed. You see how much of the time the kids spend outside. So much of the time, you know, they're kind of riding around on their bikes. So much of the time, you know, that...
Dude, this is what I'm saying about the word millennial. Yeah. Like, even those kids had a different childhood than I did. Like, kids that were born in 1980 have a different childhood than kids that were born in 1985. So... I mean, not quite as drastic, but let me tell you, kids born in 1985 had a drastically different child than kids born in, say, 1991.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, it's
anyway, man. Anyway. Oh man. I had a thought while you were talking. It was just a second ago, but, it's just back really quickly back to base income. and again, like darker side, and really, okay. Like, we talked about this, but we will have someone come on. This is really not giving this the treatment it deserves. I'd really like to get someone on the show and interview them about this. Like, maybe we could get your pal.
Yankovic?
Not Yankovic. Although I would love to get Yankovic on the show. Definitely. No. He's PHP, like the... PHP hero, Cal Evans, man. I'd love to get Cal in to talk.
Cal could talk to the ends of the earth about this stuff. He's like the best kind of curmudgeon.
Shoot, we are definitely going to get Cal on the show. Yeah, Cal, if you're listening, you're coming on the show.
Cal Evans, you need to join us. I doubt
also, that. He's definitely a bit of an inspiration for us, too. Oh, I think.
For sure.
Dude, he started the Voices of the Elephant. Podcast.
I think he has three or four podcasts at this point. He's
oh my gosh,
definitely prolific in that space. But yeah, I'd love to have him on the show. And anyone, you know, if we'd love to hear your thoughts too. We want your feedback on this episode, and I'd love to hear, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the evolution of the workforce and how it's going to impact us. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if we're all trying to, you know, follow our dreams and our passions, and as merchants or as developers or as business owners, we're all engaging in commerce in some way, and this is going to affect us. This is real stuff. So we'd love to hear more about that. I think we're almost about out of time. Do you want to take us home?
No, wait. Let me finish my thought.
Oh, we got okay. He's got one more thought. Okay.
Yeah. Brian, no. I was getting it, and I interrupted myself.
This is it. Yeah. You.
I'm really good at interrupting myself.
Do it here. Give it to me.
Base income being piloted by Y Combinator and others. What if it's actually not something that a country runs? What if it's something that actually private corporations make available in exchange for opt-in on information? i.e. like, you know, we turn our lives over to Google, and, you know, we sign up for Google Home and Google Fi, and, you know, we give them the keys to our lives. And in return, we actually get their base income, and we get all of their, like, a bunch of their tech and, like, all of this stuff in exchange for our everything but our souls.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get our VR headset and our recliner, and we can just jack in, and we'll be Wall-E one day. It'll be
exactly, yeah, dude, you nailed it.
That's where we're heading.
So there you go. There you go. Final thought on the dark side.
The dark side of the future commerce. Welcome to the upside down. Thank you, Piotr, for taking us to that really dark place. I think it's totally great.
We did talk about this a little bit before, and I think, Peter, you really did help hammer it home. So thanks for providing us with that feedback. Really, really do appreciate it.
All right. So I'll let you have the last word. Take us out.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We mentioned this like 10 times on the show today, but we do want you to give us feedback about today's show. So please leave it in the Discus comment box below. If you're subscribed on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Because we can always use more of those.
Yes.
You can also subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and on Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast.
Yes.
Or use our skill coming up.
Yeah, so, search for our skill in the store. We're going to have to change that line. Yeah, you got to look for our skill. Play it with a skill.
That's right. With that, keep looking towards the future, and we'll see you guys soon.